From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Money from the trillion-dollar bipartisan infrastructure bill that Congress passed last month is flowing to Alaska airports. U.S. Department of Transportation is sending Alaska a total of $80 million for safety and capital improvements in the first year of the five-year infrastructure program. The largest share goes to Ted Stevens International in Anchorage. It will receive $17 million. Airport Director Jim Sesniak says it essentially doubles the annual construction budget.
Our airport's growing right now, and we need to invest in it, and this money gives us the ability to continue to invest in the airport.
Sesniak says the money will pay for improvements to taxiways and the busy South Terminal. He says it will also upgrade the North Terminal to prepare for international flights from a new carrier, Northern Pacific Airways. The infrastructure law funds improvements at 235 Alaska airports. The smallest airstrips will receive at least $110,000 in the first year. Juneau International Airport is slated to get about $3.5 million. All three members of Alaska's congressional delegation voted for the so-called hard infrastructure bill, drawing criticism from former President Donald Trump and right-wing Republicans. Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy says the State Commissioner of Commerce is retiring next month. Julie Anderson has led the State Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development since the start of Dunleavy's term. Dunleavy's office says Anderson's retirement is effective January 14th. Dunleavy is expected to announce a new commissioner at a later time. Whoever he appoints will be subject to legislative confirmation. The governor thanked Anderson for her work and congratulated her on her retirement. For the second story in our series about the 50th anniversary of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, we're taking a trip to Northwest Alaska, to one of the largest zinc and lead mines in the world. Red Dog Mine is a unique partnership between a multinational mining company and NANA, the regional Native corporation. Boosters describe the mine as a model, allowing Native corporation shareholders to balance subsistence lifestyles with participation in the cash economy. But as Nat Herz with Alaska Public Media reports, it's uncertain how long the ride will last.
Alongside a road below Red Dog Mine's big tailings pond and mill, Tristan Petit leads me trudging through a soggy patch of shrubs. Petit works in Red Dog's environmental department, and he's taking me to a place that commands a lot of their attention, the bottom end of a culvert with a stream of water pouring out.
This right here is all treated water from the whole process from the mill, and then it gets discharged here.
Petit is on Red Dog's payroll, but this is not exactly a normal job. As a shareholder in NANA Regional Corporation, Petit is also an owner of the land the mine sits on. That's one reason he was able to start working at Red Dog without a college degree. Under a deal NANA negotiated with the mine's operator decades ago, Red Dog gives a hiring preference to NANA shareholders, so long as they meet the minimum qualifications for a job. Petit, who grew up in the remote Northwest Alaska village of Ambler, says he's not sure what he would have done without the mine.
Oh, man. That's really hard to say. I don't see what other opportunities there would be, you know, and so if this place didn't exist, it would be very, very difficult.
In a region without another major economic base, high-paying jobs outside the government are scarce. Red Dog's salaries can pay six figures, and hundreds of NANA shareholders work there, a little more than half the workforce. Petit has invested more than $100,000 from his Red Dog earnings into a business in his village, which takes tourists hiking, fishing, and caribou viewing in Kobuk Valley National Park. His job also pays for equipment and the expensive gas he and his family members need for their subsistence harvests.
To go down the river to get some caribou or go get some fish, getting firewood, you know, all that, since we merged with a Western-type culture, everything needs cash funding. It's just required now.
Petit isn't the only one who credits Red Dog with sustaining subsistence activities. So does Human Resources Director Cole Schaefer. Each summer, Schaefer transfers his residence. So instead of flying him back to his home near Anchorage after each shift, Red Dog takes Schaefer to the village of Kayana, where he can access his subsistence fishing cabin. He says Red Dog's weeks on, weeks off schedule fits for him because it leaves big blocks of time for harvests, which makes the mine essential in sustaining the region's villages and subsistence lifestyles, he says.
It doesn't matter whether it's in the NANA region or any other region in rural Alaska, right? You know, you have to have economic engines to help support and sustain communities. Otherwise, it makes it the burden of a government.
Not everyone in the Northwest Arctic sees Red Dog the same way. Some say the shift work pulls people away from their families and actually leaves less time for subsistence. Others say there's enough work in the region's communities for people to pay their bills without mining jobs. And residents of Kivalina, the only village downstream from the mine, say they've suffered outsized impacts while benefiting little. Millie Hawley, the administrator for Kivalina's tribal government, says residents' beluga and berry harvests have had to change. While the state says Red Dog's discharge is too diluted to be detected by the time it flows past the village, Hawley says residents are still worried about their drinking water.
The state benefit, the burr benefit, the people and the non-original shareholders benefited, but Kivalina has taken the brunt of it all.
Studies, meanwhile, have shown major economic benefits from Red Dog. It generates tens of millions of dollars in wages for Nana shareholders each year, and it's provided more than 10% of jobs in most regional villages. Here's University of Alaska Anchorage researcher Bob Leffler.
It's one of the major structures holding up the economy and holding up income in the region.
Which is why there's increasing anxiety about what happens when Red Dog runs out of ore to mine, something that's expected in about a decade. The local borough government, which gets the vast majority of its revenue from Red Dog, has been exploring alternative industries like green energy and tourism. But Nana Vice President of Natural Resources Lance Miller says those industries won't carry the region.
Would we like to have diversification? Absolutely. And Nana as a business does too. But as long as we can reasonably have a viable economic engine based on assets on our land, it's hard to see something else of that magnitude.
Red Dog is crucial for Nana and Northwest Alaska, but the mine's benefits actually extend far beyond the region, and so would the impacts if it closes. That's because of provisions in the Native Claims Settlement Act that call for regional corporations to redistribute 70% of their natural resource revenues with other regional and village corporations. Money from Red Dog represents a huge chunk of that shared revenue statewide, which means that some small village corporations depend on the mine to balance their yearly budgets. Nathan McCowan chairs a group that represents village corporations. He says the disappearance of the revenue sharing cash, known as 7J money, could force actions like selling of lands.
7J keeps a number of the village corporations rolling as going concerns without having to really face extraordinarily difficult existential questions.
Red Dog's closure in 2032 is not certain. There's a major deposit 10 miles away that could extend the mine's life by decades. But Red Dog's operators say it will take years to find out if it's commercially viable. In the meantime, Nana and another mining company are exploring a possible new copper mine. Like Red Dog, it could create hundreds of jobs and hundreds of millions of dollars in income, but it also risks impacts to the region's fish and game. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
This story is part of a reporting collaboration between Alaska Public Media, Indian Country Today, and the Anchorage Daily News on the 50th anniversary of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, with financial support from the Alaska Center for Excellence in Journalism. Ocean farming and aquaculture in Alaska's coastal regions could get a boost from a federal grant program. U.S. Economic Development Administration is taking grant applications as part of the federal pandemic relief funding program. Peninsula Clarion reports that a proposal from Alaska outlines a shellfish and aquatic plants industry. The application is among 60 finalists from a nationwide pool of more than 500 proposals. Up to 30 proposals will get funding between $25 and $100 million. The proposal aims to turn Alaska's marine farming and aquaculture into a $100 million per year industry. In local COVID-19 news, health officials report 21 new COVID-19 cases from Friday through Sunday for Juneau. No one is at Bartlett Regional Hospital with an active COVID-19 case. One person tested positive on Friday who is connected to Sit-E.T. Shanach Glacier Valley School. 73% of Juneau's total population is fully vaccinated. Free vaccines, at-home test kits, and drive-through test appointments are available locally. More than 14,000 test kits have already been distributed, though Deputy City Manager Robert Barr says the supply may be limited.
This looks like enough to me based on our burn rate to carry us through the end of the calendar year. The supply that we're getting, it's kind of touch and go, right? We're getting enough to basically keep our distribution sites up and running, but not really enough to feel super comfortable about it.
He says these kits, which each contain two tests, are generally provided by the federal government to the state, which then distributes them to local agencies. Barr says these tests aren't as sensitive as the ones done at the airport or at the city's drive-through testing site, which means...
If you're suspected of having COVID, right, so because of a close contact or because you have a symptom, the guidance is if you test negative on the first one, to use the second one 36 hours later to have that extra level of certainty.
On the other hand, false positives with these tests are very rare. He says people with symptoms who test positive can trust those results. At that point, the advice for what to do is familiar.
Really, if you test positive on one of these, the advice isn't any different than what it has always been if you test positive at all, and that is to begin an isolation period.
Statewide, officials report 428 new people with COVID-19 Friday through Sunday with no new deaths. 65 people with COVID-19 are hospitalized, including 11 people on ventilators. For more information and resources, go to juno.org/COVID-19. And finally, the National Weather Service has a winter storm warning going into effect at 6 p.m. today through noon Tuesday for the Juneau area. Weather Service says to expect heavy snow with up to 7 inches of accumulation. There's also a chance of freezing rain tonight. Travel could be very difficult. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, December 20th, 2021. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.